That was the best thing ever. Jane Lynch hosted the 63rd Emmy Awards ceremony on Sunday night and is returning to Glee on Fox tonight as Sue Sylvester, the cheerleading coach you love to hate. These are only her most recent achievements, however, and she tells about her journey to success in Hollywood in her new memoir, Happy Accidents. It's published by Hyperion, and I'm so glad to welcome Jane Lynch to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello, Jane.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so great. It's such an honor to meet you. I love your work.
Thanks.
And what a big week you're having.
Yeah.
The Emmy Awards and now the Leonard Lopate Show.
I can just pack it all up now and go home.
you looked, you were great on the Emmys, but you also looked like you were having just a great time. Was it as much fun as it looked like?
Yeah. You know, the weeks prior when it was just this vague notion of the Emmys, I didn't know what I would be doing. I would wake up in the middle of the night screaming. But once it took shape, it was one of the most exciting creative weeks of my life, getting that show together.
Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of award shows. I mean, my usual beef is that the writing is so lame and there's this forced banter and everything. But you were great. Were you working with the writers and were you creating a lot of your bits? Or
yeah, the writer, Jill Soloway, my very good friend.
Oh, love Jill Soloway.
And Faith Soloway, her sister. Yeah. And Dana Gould and Carol Leifer. We had help from all over the place. People just showed up. We just called them and said, come on down. And everybody pitched jokes and we had a lot of fun. And we were, on our feet. We were pitching stuff. And I'm very happy with how it turned out. Just comedically, I was just so pleased.
Well, you know, the book is great. I really enjoyed it. And one thing that's a little bit different about it is a lot of times you'll read memoirs by somebody who's got a big TV show or something, and it clearly was dictated to some ghostwriter who sort of put in all the requisite moments. But this feels like something that you really poured your heart into. This is like it really sounded like you.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, it took my heart and soul to do it.
How long did it take for you to write?
We were given 4 months.
Oh, wow.
A pretty quick turnaround. All of this was a happy accident doing this book, which is, of course, the title of my book. I dithered away a month, and then I got to work, and my wife is really my co-partner, Laura, in this, my co-writer. And it was when I wasn't bleeding from the ears, because I'm just writing does not come naturally to me. It was a very cathartic, wonderful experience.
Well, you talk about growing up in Illinois, and you didn't have like an easy ride into the whole show business thing. You talk about being very awkward, uncomfortable with your body and who you are, and what was it like growing up and not feeling,
quite right.
Good, quite right. What
well, I think it's probably a lot of people feel that way. And, I think that when I was on stage and, in front of a camera later on, it's where I did feel comfortable. I felt like I belonged in the world and I felt entitled to the air I breathed, which off stage was not the case. I was born with an extra helping of angst. I was very insecure and I was always afraid that the parade was going to pass me by and that I wouldn't get to do what I wanted to do and have the relationships I wanted to have. I really just had no faith in myself and navigating my own life, none. And I through many different happy accidents in my life, I got led to exactly the right place I needed to be and the lesson I needed to learn. And then once that started spilling into my work, when I realized that all the characters that I were ever written are actually inside of you and that my best work would be inside of me, that's when I started to feel like, my work became profound for me.
When was that? What was that tipping point? When did that? Because that seems like a pretty big discovery to
me. Well, of course, everything is an evolution and a kind of an ebb and a flow. But I can point to a moment where things shifted in terms of my feelings about myself and putting that into my work. Was I was in therapy and I was complaining about somebody passing me on the bike lane on the right, which is dangerous. You could get hurt. As I was telling her, I became more and more self-righteous and upset. And she said, you must – she first of all started laughing. She said, you must write a monologue for this character and bring it in next week and let's talk about it. And we were going to examine that part of myself. And I brought in a pretty funny monologue and I performed it for her. She loved it. And we, of course, did our therapy after that. But then I took that monologue and I refined it a little bit and I performed it all by myself with a little tape of the Ride of the Valkyries to introduce me. And it was the first time I did something that came so consciously from myself. And I was all on my own out there. I wasn't with a group of people. I kind of like being, I still love being in an ensemble, but I was very much on my own. And I saw, and in that moment in therapy, I started to come to my own, not as a not only as a person, but as an artist, if I dare say I am an artist at this point.
And how old were you at that point when you had that breakthrough?
35.
Yeah, so you took your your merry time.
Yeah, right.
Well, you talk very frankly, but I also think really hilariously about your alcoholism and because again, in a lot of memoirs, there's a certain kind of trope about discussing addictions. But you actually, one thing I think is funny about the way you describe your alcoholism is that when you went into AA, you were sort of bummed that you didn't have any really good drunk-a-logs. So you didn't have a good story. You just drank Bud Light, boring drink.
Yeah.
And
Miller Light.
Miller
Light,
sorry.
Let's get the right plug going here.
Right product placement.
Right, yeah. And I did. And, you know, a friend of mine who was much bigger druggie and drinker than me said, you know, I spilled more than you drank, became the thing. And it's true. I always said that if I had known I'd be telling this story over and over again, I would have made it a lot more interesting. My story was much more internal. You know, I paid my bills. My life did not fall apart. I had some unremembered vomit in the bathroom every once in a while and horrible, horrible debilitating hangovers and a terrible feeling about myself. I hit my bottom in more of an emotional way than an actual, you know, like alcohol leached the life out of me. It leached the life out of me emotionally.
And as a performer, when you were in AA, were you kind of, did you feel this competitive instinct that other people's stories were better and that you were just not standing up to that?
Exactly. I did. I had a drunk-a-log envy for sure. But I also loved, I would go to 2-3 meetings a day sometimes to hear stories. I'm Irish down to my toes. I love a good story. And these, real life is going on in AA is what I realized. People are being real and they're being emotionally honest. And I saw the power of being emotionally honest with yourself as these people told these stories that were, some of them just horrendous of what they went through and the lives they destroyed and the selfishness. And then they, when you think they've hit their bottom, they continue to drug and drink, and then they're like the phoenix rising from the ashes, and they're this person with these bright eyes telling this story, talking about how much they love their wife or their husband, and oh my God, it was going on a crazy roller coaster ride, most enjoyable every time I went to an AA meeting.
And did this contribute to your decision to do a one-woman show, to create a one-woman show? Was it this immersion in these monologues? Did that?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I fell in love with storytelling.
Tell us a little bit about that show, because that was kind of a pivotal moment, because you wrote it and performed it.
I did it of my own accord. I made something out of nothing, which I'd never done before. I'm a great follower. I love being part of a group. I love when someone calls me and says, Jane, you want to be a part of blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah. This I did all by myself. I couldn't be on stage by myself the whole time, so I recruited a couple of actors. But I got a producer. I did the sound myself. I didn't run it, but I created the sound design and the lighting design and the set. I did the little costumes. I did everything myself. And it was called Oh Sister, My Sister, and it was all these monologues that I, starting with the angry lady, which is the character I did with my therapist. I came up with 3 more monologues for her. And characters I had done in sketch comedy, I started kind of putting together monologues for them, and I did a lot of writing. A lot of stuff that I had performed before, I kind of squeezed it all in, some funny lesbian folk singing.
And always good.
Yeah, always good. And kind of my friend Marla Kerbin, who actually lives here in New York, I'm going to see her in a couple of hours. At the time, I read her all the monologues, and she sat back smoking a cigarette and said, okay, this is how it's going to go. It's about female empowerment, and it's about this one, the angry lady is going to be 1, 2, 3 in this area here, and then you're going to slide in this character, then you know, folk song here, folk song there. It's going to be all about women who have had nervous breakthroughs and come out on the other side. And that was the loose kind of umbrella that I put all these monologues under. And it was, you know, it was a hit. It was sold out. It was a great thing. You know, I did it with my own money. We got great reviews. We got an LA Weekly Award. It was, you know, one of those things where you go, oh my gosh, I can do this. I did this all by myself. And I was 38 years old. And I can't say that it led to any work, but I think energetically it blew the doors off my open for my confidence, and it made me a person that is available for that kind of creative success that I now kind of rest my laurels on. Where I am today.
Where you are today on the Lopate Show.
Yes, exactly. See?
I'm Andy Borowitz in for Leonard Lopate. I'm talking to Jane Lynch, who you all know by now, but she's also the author of a new book, Happy Accidents. We're here at WNYC and WNYC.org. I want to play a couple of things from your oeuvre, if I may
please,
use that.
Use
the
oeuvre.
Word. Use the word artist, so yeah. I think I can use the word
oeuvre. Oh, absolutely.
We'll get French now. but first, we're going to go a little bit out of order, but tell me how Glee came about, how that role became yours.
Happy accident. I had committed myself to do another pilot, and I got the script sent. Glee was going to be not in pilot season, was being shot outside of pilot season, so I was already committed to something else. When I got the script, Ryan Murphy sent it to me and said, I want you to play Sue Sylvester. And so my agent said, you know, she can only do it as a guest star because she's committed to something else. He said, that's fine. So I opened up the script, and Sue Sylvester was described thusly. May or may not be on horse estrogen, may or may not have posed for Penthouse. And I was like, okay, I got to play this woman. And, you know, I loved it. I fell in love with it. If this show got on the air, I didn't know the success it would have, but I was pretty darn sure that if it got on the air, it would have a following that would be rabid, because I know how the power of music, and I know the power of people's differences being celebrated in one room where they raise their voice in songs. It was just a perfect recipe for a hit show.
And don't you think your American Idol, in a weird way, kind of opened
paved
the door
the way?
For
absolutely.
It? Because that's like a celebration of, like, some people are great looking, some people are not so great looking, but they all have a lot of passion and heart and talent.
So. I absolutely do. And that's why American Idol is such a big hit, too. People like to watch themselves, because these are normal people. They're not in the show business machinery, and they, you know, kind of are plucked from obscurity.
Well, we have. I want to play a little clip. We pulled a couple of things. This is from Glee, and it's your character Sue Sylvester, and she's giving her little commentary called Sue's Corner on the local news, and she's talking about the sneaky gays. So let's take a listen to this.
I got a bee in my bun at Western Ohio. You know what I've had it up to here with? Sneaky gays. Gone are the days of Oscar Wilde, Liberace, homosexuals so flaming they could be seen from space. Why, nowadays, sneaky gays are everywhere. At the church, at the mall, picking up their meticulously dressed, fastidious children from daycare. Why, you could be sitting next to a sneaky gay right now and you'd never even know it. And that just don't sit right with one Sue Sylvester. Now, I got nothing against gays. Just ask my sassy intern, Tyler. He has to live in my tool shed because I deny him health care, as I consider gayness a pre-existing condition.
That's pretty great. Did you have a hand in that
Not
little
at
that,
all.
That was just written the writers? You've that, got good writers there.
Ian
huh?
Brennan. That uh-huh. is Ian Brennan. He mm-hmm. rolls his eyes into the back of his head and he comes up with that stuff.
Yeah, those sneaky gays. Yeah, that's great. What do you know, this show, you've had a lot of experience as you know, in your past on stage and singing and doing it all, but here, and the character was not designed as a singing dancing character first, but you've been thrust into that.
I have
quite a bit, and tell us about it with people like Olivia Newton-John. Yeah. That's got to be. I will probably never do a number with Olivia.
You probably won't, and I'm here to tell you that the chances are you probably won't.
I know,
and the
I'm
chances
coming to
were.
Terms with it.
Yeah, good, because accept it. It's not going to happen, and the chances were very slim for that to happen to me. But somehow I beat the odds, and this is someone who I'd a huge crush on growing up. I Honestly Love You was a song that would just break my heart. And I named my dog after her. My dog Olivia is named after Olivia Newton-John. And so when we started doing Glee, Ryan's a huge fan. Ryan Murphy's a huge fan.
The creator
fan
of the show.
He said, I'm starting my mission to get her on our show. And by the middle of the first season, we got her in.
Wow. And you did Let's Get Physical.
Yep. Yeah.
And how was that? What was the setup for that on the show? Because that seems like a big reach.
Oh, it barely made any sense.
No setup.
No, not really.
Just let's go right to the
right,
cut
let's go
to,
right to it. You know
to.
What it was? It was, you know, it was a silly video, the original one. And it was something that we made it, and Olivia was great about this, you know, that it was her great shame in her career that she did that terrible physical video and wanted to redeem herself and redo it. And Sue Sylvester offered her the opportunity to do that.
I want to play something else, one of my favorite things, a clip of you from Best in Show, a great Christopher Guest movie. How did you become involved in that world? Because that's such a great ensemble, so many great comedians, like Fred Willard and people, people
O'Hara.
I love, Catherine O'Hara. How did you,
Michael McKean?
How did you first get discovered by that group?
I did a callback for a commercial for Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, and I saw on the write-in sheet that Christopher Guest was directing it, and he would be in the room. He directs commercials all the time, totally unbeknownst to me. So I met him there. He cast me in the Kellogg's Frosted Flakes commercial, and 3 months later, 4 months later, I saw him at a restaurant in Beverly Hills, and he was casting Best in Show, and he said, "You know what? I probably would have remembered you, but I haven't remembered you, but now I'm remembering you. Will you come to my office today? I have an idea." And he pitched me, like I would say, pitched me the idea of playing Jennifer Coolidge's lover, with the poodle. And then he said, "You know, I want to talk to my producers about it. Are you up for this?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I'll call you tonight." And he called me that night and said, "Would you like to come to Vancouver to shoot this?" And I said, "You betcha."
Well, this is from Best in Show, and this is, you're describing your character's relationship with Sherri Ann, who's played by Jennifer Coolidge. And let's take a listen to this.
With Sherri Ann, we have this fantastic friendship, too. It's really great. And we have a little bit of a family dynamic going here, and it pretty much mirrors what I grew up with, you know. My father was the taskmaster, the disciplinarian, which is what I do. I'm the mommy slash daddy. That's right.
Like Mr. Punishment.
Oh, well, you know, and also reward. But Sherry's responsible for the unconditional love, you know.
And the decorative abilities.
Exactly, the heart and the soul, you know, which is what my mother did, and that was her job. You know, she was there for the unconditional love. And it worked for my family, you know, until my mom committed suicide in 81.
So great. So are you traveling all over the country to promote the book?
A little bit. You know, I'm still in production, so I will be, weekends I'm going to, be flying to Chicago, driving down to San Diego, that kind of thing.
Well, It's a great book. It is got so much more personality than it's not just another
can I do
celebrity
right now,
memoir.
Is what you're saying?
No. You've had tons in this room too.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. I've been speaking with my favorite Jane Lynch about her memoir Happy Accidents, which is published by Voice, an imprint of Hyperion, and she's going to be reading and signing books tonight at 7 at the Union Square Barnes & Noble. And you can see her in the Glee season premiere tonight at 8 p.m. You're multimedia.
What's going on?
Eastern on Fox. Jane, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
That's going to do it. On tomorrow's show, rock legend Robbie Robertson discusses his latest album, How to Become Clairvoyant. Then actor Hal Holbrook on his life and long road to stardom. And former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm. She shares her prescription to revive American industries. Plus, word maven Patricia T. O'Connor takes your calls on the English language for those of you who speak it. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Sarah Waltuck, Keith Carney, and contributing producer Fran Jacobs. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Andy Borowitz, in for Leonard Lopate. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.